It's incredible how a little financial incentive can actually mean a tremendous change on how virtuous people actually behave.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Welcome back to Circularity FM and our series featuring highlights from the Loop Forum 2025. Loop Forum is the leading Nordic business event spotlighting circularity as a key driver for building future-proof businesses. In the final episode of this series, we hear from Thomas Norman Kongiem, co-founder of EcoTree. In his keynote, he talks about how today's business models make it profitable to destroy nature, and why the future depends on building models that create both ecological and financial value. But before we start, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this keynote, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm.
We'll stay within the same theme. EcoTree is joining me on stage. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. All right. Hi, everyone. How are you doing? Good, good. Well, let me start with a very short question. We do need more nature, right? And no one here hates nature, right? No? So far, so good. Well, then help me explain this. Help me explain why we keep destroying nature at such an alarming rate. Why such a dangerous nonsense? Well, I believe it's because there is a business case for nature to be destroyed. I mean, not that we are actively seeking to destroy nature, thank God, but this world, this model that we have built, simply allows nature to be destroyed as a sort of acceptable collateral damage, right? As something that comes with no cost, or at least with a great deal of hidden cost, right? So we're not looking. So the only way we can see to stop that nonsense is to instead create a business case for nature to be restored, preserved, right? For nature to be valued. So when we started EcoTree, almost 10 years ago, we actually were inspired by the Danish recycling system for used cans and bottles, right? It's called the PEN system. And it's a fantastic, super simple and efficient way to actually monetize the act of recycling, right? Countries like Denmark, with a well-functioning PEN system, have 92% return of the used cans and bottles, when countries without such a system, like France, Spain, have roughly below 50%, right? So it's incredible how a little financial incentive can actually mean a tremendous change on how virtuous people actually behave, right? So we decided at EcoTree to, mimic, duplicate, apply that good proven old method of financial incentive to sustainable forestry and tree planting. It's pretty simple. Basically, we're moving away from the classic philanthropic model, right, where you donate, you sponsor, however you call it, tree planting. We give the opportunity to actually move into a commercial model where you buy newly planted trees and you become what we call the tree owner. What does it mean to be a tree owner? Well, it means basically that you can, you support financially the planting of sustainable new forests, meaning that you can claim the environmental benefits associated to your trees and to your forest, like contribution to carbon capture or contribution to preserving biodiversity. But, there's always a but, you also get the perspective of a financial gain. Because once your trees reach maturity, we selectively cut and harvest them. We never do clear cut, let me be very clear on that, But nevertheless, we do have some selective productive activities. It's called thinning, where we so will harvest and cut a selective amount of trees once in a while. And then we hand over 100% of that revenue to you. I mean, you're the tree owners, it's your timber, so it's your revenue. So let's be honest, it's a long-term perspective investment, right? And there are quicker and more efficient ways to make money these days. Nevertheless, it's not a financial product as such, but it's this fundamental idea that you are turning your environmental action from what used to be a cost on your P&L, if you're a company, into an asset in your balance sheet, right? You're not just doing the nature a favor, you're also doing yourself or your organization a favor in creating value. Well, I was initially referring to the fact that capitalism had contributed to fuck up the planet to some extent. Well, that model actually leverages very simple, classic capitalism-based features or tricks. Let me show you three of them. Property law, probably one of the most fundamental, you know, classics of capitalism. Well, we've leveraged European property law to dissociate the trees, which obviously are rooted into the ground. We dissociate them legally from the ground, meaning that we or Ecotree or any other third-party landowner can actually own its land and sell the trees as part of the surface, right? And like any other commodity, online, in a few clicks, for a few bunch of euros, with basically, as soon as 15 euros, I said, and as a couple of clicks and a few minutes to get done. So this has a fundamental, a quite crucial impact. It means that you democratize the investment in nature. I'm pretty sure you're all aware that forestry has always been a fairly attractive class of asset, right? And many large, well-established companies, many wealthy families actually do own forestry assets. But it's a class of asset that always came with a pretty high price tag, right? It's usually a few hundreds of thousands of euros to get started. Well, with this model, actually, you can engage anyone, from individuals like you and me or small or medium-sized companies, right? So you democratize the access to ownership and to investment in nature and in natural capital. The second one is fungibility. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It comes from the trade of bulk commodities like sugar, coffee, oil, and that kind of stuff. It basically means that an item can have, as long provided that it has a certain set of characteristics, it's exchangeable with any other item sharing those same characteristics. So if you look back at those trees, let's say you own an oak tree planted 2 years ago that's going to be harvested in 60 years and in a certain location. There are many of those trees, and so you will have many co-owners owning similar trees to yours. And that fungibility concept means that if something happens to your trees or to that part of your forest, it can be a storm, a fire, a disease, and let's say 30% of the forest goes down. Well, you're not risking to lose all your investment because the risk will be mitigated among the different co-owners. So everyone will basically lose 30% of its investment, but everyone will share the remaining 70%. And last but not least, the escrow account is also something we're leveraging. Is this idea that, as I've said, when you buy a tree for 15 euros, roughly 30% is actually our gross margin. That's where we make money as a business. Another 30% covers, the operational cost, acquisition costs, and so forth. And very unique and interesting is that the remaining 40% go on an escrow account, meaning that that bunch of money is frozen, so to speak, to make sure that there are the long-term financial resources for your trees and your forest. Right, because all this is not just about putting trees in the ground. It's about building healthy, long-lasting ecosystems. And that requires, long-lasting financial resources, which, again, a typical escrow account can enable. So practically, this can be materialized in many ways. For corporates, typically, you can use this tree ownership concept as a gift, right? It's something you own, so you can give it away. And for companies, this is a typically, well, quite meaningful, original, and actually valuable gift. You can also use it for sales and commercial purposes. When you associate it to some sort of marketing, operation, or sales campaign. And last but not least, if you are into CSRD, you can value that in your extra financial reporting. So again, here we are with a model that simply turns basically environmental action from an OPEX into a CAPEX, where again, you're not just creating value for nature, but you're also creating value for yourself or for your organization. Now we're here in Denmark, right? And for those who have been here on the previous keynote, you've heard Jeppe Bruus, the Minister of the Green Transition and the Grøn Trepart. And that is a fantastic initiative. I'm a big fan of it. I wish many other countries would actually implement such ambitious initiative. I would have called it maybe a bit different than the Green Trepart. I think I would have gone for something like this. Like, make Denmark green again. Then I guess I should be green. Yeah, something like this. I should have made one and give it to the minister, actually, before he left. But the idea is that it is an ambitious program, right? The minister said it. The idea is to double up the cover, the forestry cover of Denmark from 15 to 30% by 2045, right? It's 250,000 hectares we're talking about. You have already, I think, 23 local communities at work trying to implement that locally. Well, you have one dedicated ministry and minister, we've seen him, and it's above 5 billion, actually euros, not crown, sorry for that mistake, of public funding. So it is very ambitious. But here again, there is a but. The key factor of success of such a plan, as actually the minister has implied it, is to convert the land, which today is basically agricultural land, into those wished new forests, right? And there are a great bunch of subsidies to do so, but will that actually be enough, right? Ultimately, it's nothing else than a donation from all the Danish taxpayers, right? So how far can that go? And last week, actually, that subsidies level has increased a little bit, which in a way is a better incentive, but it's going to cost more money to the Danish taxpayers. So how far can that go? And even the agricultural people, the farmers, let's not forget that they are actually very sound business people. They want their land to be productive, efficient. They don't just want to sit back and you know, raise their hand to grab some subsidies. So what if we let, actually again, capitalism lift up the weight of those ambitious targets? What if we let the market scale that initiative? So what we're currently working at is actually a pretty simple model where we would connect the private sector and the landowners with a sort of a white label version of our current platform. The landowners would very freely engage with any forestry company. It can be us, it can be Klimaskovfonden, it can be Skovjørgerne, Dalgas, and so there are a few in Denmark. Anyone will do. Whether they have 5, 50, of 500 hectares, it doesn't really matter. Any landowner can connect with a forestry company, engage in a forestry plan, and we would put their trees and their carbon credits on the platform, available for anyone to purchase, like we're doing today with our own trees and carbon credits. So basically, in return, that would mean that private sector, it could be individuals or companies, they would be buying those trees and carbon credits and generate revenue. Very legit, very efficient revenue to the landowners. I'm not talking about any subsidies or any philanthropic here. This is purely transactional. Of course, the government can still make it even more sexy with some subsidies and actually hopefully could help in making, you know, some sort of buzz around such an initiative. But you have definitely this idea of a private sector that can run on its own autonomously and actually way more effectively. Just to show you the scale, at which point it's a no-brainer. This is the typical agricultural yield for 1 hectare of agricultural land on average in Denmark, right? Over 10, 40, 60, and 100 years. Well, it's increasing, but you could admit that it is definitely a long-term yield. This is, if you compare it with silviculture, so forestry, with the sale of carbon credits. So you can see that you monetize your land, well, still on the long term, but significantly higher. And if you add to that selling trees upfront, like again we're doing with our current model, well, not only are you earning much more, you're earning much more at the very start, right? Remember that the farmers, I think the minister implied that as well, is a population where half of them are above 40, 55 years old, right? So perspective of 100 years might be a little bit appealing to them, right? And they also, I think 57% is the average debt ratio for this part of the population. So again, you know, paying debts is something you need to do now, not just on 100 years. So if you look at that from a cash flow perspective, this is how it looks. Again, well, the steady but very low and slow yield improvement cash flow channel of from in blue agricultural and in orange classic forestry, and significantly higher from the very beginning, again, the cash flow generated by selling trees and carbon credits on your forests. So basically, it's a no-brainer for the landowners because it's profitable and very much cash-friendly. For the private sector, it's just a local way to engage, right? Many companies today are buying, you know, carbon credits from some other exotic part of the world or engaging in many different ways, and that's fine. But why not, you know, be part of that initiative? Make the green tripartite very local, very concrete. Engage your teammates, your customers, your suppliers in investing in nature and in buying those local carbon credits from the Danish farmers and landowners. And well, for the government, isn't there a better way to actually leverage that public money? Right? They initiate, they trigger the conversion, but then they let the market build it up and scale it up. Again, there's no one is doing anyone a favor here. Everyone is running after his own, you know, turf, and that's fine. And that's how it's going to scale, because there's something in it for every one of them. So right now we're working on a pilot with different municipalities, Holbæk, Aarhus, with some local players, local landowners, or we're waiting to convert the land. So now a call to action right now might be to invite companies to reach us, to us, come visit us at our booth over there and see how you can actually become one of the first ones, you know, to lift up that challenge and be and anchor your name as one of the front runners of the actual green tripartite argument initiative in Denmark. So in a nutshell, and I'll finish with this, let's just remember that sustainability or the future of sustainability might actually be just right there. It's a model that is not just ecologically sustainable, but that is also economically and financially sustainable. Thank you very much. Happy to take a few questions if there are right now or later. And let's make Denmark green again. Thank you very much. Do I have time for questions, actually? Or all right, any questions? Great.
Hey, Nick speaking. Just like, this sounds like a very good business model, like super nice slides. Everything is like coming together. I also really like that you're, you know, thinking about how this works with like legislation that is coming out now. But like, what is like the biggest challenge in actually scaling this up? And making it like European, international, like maybe you could give a perspective on that.
That's a good question. Obviously, I've described it as a sort of a platform, right? Where we would make our platform available to both the landowners, who will basically provide the supply, the trees, the carbon credits. And then on the other side, that platform is available to the private sector, which are the buyers, the demand, individuals or corporates. So like on any platform business, I think the key factor of success is to build up both sides simultaneously, or at least at the same pace and at the same scale, likely. And while we currently have based on the figures that I've shown you, a high interest from landowners, already, you know, have already intentions and concrete signs of intentions of them willing to convert. What we, our biggest challenge now is to build up the other side, basically having buyers, corporates likely, but also individuals to, yeah, engage and buy those trees and buy those carbon credits from those landowners rather than any other country or any other place in the world. So I believe this short term, at least, making this pilot a success and getting it in Denmark and in Europe and worldwide the attention it deserves, I think the challenge is to manage to build up both sides of the platform together.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Hi. I was wondering, what is the benefit of keeping this local in Europe, if you can call that local, and not scaling to other areas in the global south where you could maybe bring other beneficial development, I don't know, actions for the local people there as well with the carbon credits?
Yeah, that is a very good question. And I wish that this model could, you know, be forwarded in many other regions. We have focused on Europe and remain focused on Europe first because that's where we have our forestry expertise. And, well, temperate forests like the ones you find in Europe are managed differently than tropical or boreal forests. So there would be another sort of expertise. But primarily, the main reason so far why we haven't duplicated our model in typically the global south is because you do need a legal and political stability that, unfortunately, many of the countries in those regions cannot offer. Because, again, the impact we're all aiming for, whether it's via carbon credit or whether it's via trees that would, again, help biodiversity and all that, I mean, we're all in on that on the long run. And it is crucial for the validity, the integrity of what is offered, the trees or the carbon credits, that you can secure that they are there on a very long time. And again, unfortunately, the legal framework is not always there to enable that. When I talk property law or fungibility, those are concepts that you cannot necessarily duplicate in all those countries. And especially the property law, for example, in Denmark, it's great that whenever you turn a land from agricultural status to what's called fredskov, forestry, basically, it's irrevocable. You cannot, even if it changes hands, even if you have another owner, it cannot, the purpose of the land cannot change back to anything else than forestry. So that is a fundamental and very strong, you know, certification of a legal aspect, which unfortunately we can't necessarily find in any country worldwide. So, yeah, that's where we stand. If I may have just one elaborate on one thing, is there's a lot of discussion when you talk about forestry about, you know, cutting trees. Is it good or bad to cut trees? I've mentioned that we don't do clear cuts, so we don't clear an entire area, obviously, because this is sort of a disaster for biodiversity typically. Nevertheless, cutting trees is a good thing. And we believe the model that I have described is a sort of a compromise between untouched nature and highly productive sort of monocultural tree farms, right? And we believe it's the best compromise because, first of all, well, having some sort of productive activities is what actually triggers the economic model I have presented. But it also has actually a positive environmental impact that is often very much ignored. Planting trees and cutting trees means that, first of all, removing trees the way we do it with thinnings, it's a little bit like a morning scrub in the shower, right? You remove the dead cell and you let your skin regenerate quicker. A bit similarly, removing all the trees, mature trees, give more light, more space to the younger ones. And that way you sort of boost and accelerate the development of the forestry ecosystem. And the second environmental impact is that it's called a substitution effect. It's that, well, every time you use wood as a commodity, well, you're actually technically replacing plastic, cement, steel, which are much more climate-heavy commodities. I couldn't help but notice the wooden floor of that building. Imagine if all that would have been, whatever, metal, steel. It is said that for 1 cubic meter of timber, when it replaces equivalent in plastic, you actually save 2 tons of CO2 emissions or CO2 equivalent emissions. And you save up to 4 tons of CO2 emissions if you replace, if that cubic meter of wood replaces actually steel or cement. So that substitution effect is actually can be very strong. And it is fueled by, of course, sustainable, responsible, productive activities. So yeah, this is what the type of forestry that we implement. That's what is planned within the Green Tripartite Agreement. And that's what actually the forestry in Denmark used to be. But this is important to just highlight that this is obviously the best way to achieve those ambitious environmental goals.
Thanks for listening to the final episode of our series about the Loop Forum 2025. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this keynote, please sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Our next series will be about circular economy pioneers from Kenya. Let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.